Dr. John, where were you? Can you remember where you were when you heard about the great floods in New Orleans and the breaking of the levees?
Well, I was in, when the storm was coming even, I was somewhere in, I think, in Minneapolis or wherever I was, which was at the other end of the Mississippi River, and I saw the storm coming. I had called my daughter and I told her, get out. And I remember there was a point in time I was making a lot of calls to say, this is serious.
What were your first thoughts when you heard the news?
Well, it's... my father before me had always said that, you know, that there were so many flaws in the city that this... The levees that were put up by the Corps of Engineers was really like third world country stuff, and they wouldn't hold, and they hadn't held in prior hurricanes. And so he felt very strongly about it, like a lot of people, that we were always in danger. So it wasn't like something I wasn't aware of.
But when you heard on the radio or television that day what had happened and the extent of the probability of damage, what did you think?
Well, I actually knew that they had blown the levees in the lower Ninth Ward before, and that they were, it was like the poor people lived there, you know, and that's the sick part about corrupt governments is it's always at the sacrifice of the poor and the needy that people do horrible things. And there was just so much going on there that was so wrong that people were being shot in the streets. They were just citizens. They weren't any... And they was worried that they were starting to shoot back. Well, New Orleans has a lot of guns in it. My grandmother used to carry a couple of guns. My wife carried a couple of guns. It wasn't like... That's an unusual thing in New Orleans. It's not like here, where people are not so gun-carrying. I don't carry a gun for years, but the point is that back then, I had so many calls on my cell phone from people. I actually think I was talking to a friend of mine, I think he actually drowned in his attic. He couldn't cut through. He was an old guy. And I think I was talking to him when he drowned from the water coming up. And it was just a dear old friend of mine. And there was so much of this kind of thing happened. It was like as soon as I got off the road and we went home, it was...
You went home, you went back to New Orleans?
Yeah. It was like so many people would tell me, like, epic saga movie stories about what happened, seeing their grandfather hanging in a tree outside, or what, just on and on stories that just any one of them could have been like a movie or something. It was just tragedy.
Let me go back to something you said earlier. You said people took out guns and were shooting and were shot back at. What caused that?
Well, there was military head, Blackwater, Black Ops there that were, I have no idea what they were doing there, shooting.
That was a firm that was used in Iraq.
But they're not just a firm, they're part of our military. And somebody... actually saw them on a Elysian Fields overpass shooting citizens, and some military people came by and they was saluted each other. That's why I have knowledge of them being... And early on, we had a lot of stuff when we wrote songs for the last album about all of this, of information that was on computers that later wasn't on computers. But we had a lot of confirmations to what we wrote about there.
Well, are you saying that is there an implication to in what you say that people were being shot at because they were suspected looters?
I think it's more to do with people could have been. That's not was. But then that's a lot of that goes on. There was a lot of things going on in the city of New Orleans. Different people brought in people to protect their property that was shooting people. People brought, and there was looting. It's later been proved there was looting as much by the police as there was by citizens. But what are people that haven't had water or food or been, you know, supposed to do? Die? People will do something in a life and death situation that they're not going to normally do. And when it's so many situations going on at once. There was a kid I know that he had been a thug, and the kid was like a criminal. But everything, he called me in the middle of it all and said, "I'm running with my posse, Doc." He says, "You know, listen, I hate to tell you this, but they're shooting at us. And if somebody starts shooting us, we're going to start shooting back at them. So I'm just telling you right now." And that's all I heard from him. And I saw him after the storm, and he said he was still messed up from everything. But they were alive and blah, blah, blah. But it was just one more story by that time. But it got overwhelming when I had to go get a new phone, and I had lost all my numbers, and everybody else down there had new numbers, so I couldn't just reach people anymore.
How quickly could you get there, and what was the first thing that you saw?
I had gone to the lower ninth ward with a reporter named Chris Rose from the Times-Picayune newspaper, and he said, "Can you say something that could help make the people feel a little better? I've been trying to write articles." And I said, "Chris, I feel too traumatic to say anything." And he named the article "Traumatic," which is like one of my kind of messing up the language. But the point is that a lot of people did feel something about that article he wrote. It wasn't what I said, because I couldn't even say anything, because I saw like so many houses smashed together, and you could smell the corpses still in it. You could see the string of the dogs, the cats, and rats in a line trying to get into feed off the bodies. And it was just really sad that there was so much smell of death, smell of rotten stuff in refrigerators, so much. It was just, during that space of time, some other news crew had me go on a drive a car, which I was not good at driving in the first place, but the cameraman almost fell off the back of the car because I hit a railroad bumps. And the streets are normally bad in New Orleans, but they were worse after Katrina. But we did play, I remember, at Lundi Gras the day before Mardi Gras in New Orleans. And
this was the following year.
And I remember that the next day we played in Florida, and I made a comment on the stage that we had lived under the long dynasty of corruption, and now we were living under the, because I knew that Bush was the governor of Florida.
Brother.
Yeah, my daughter was there, and all, and I said, one of my daughters was there, but I said, and now we're living under the Bush dynasty of corruption. And I think dynasties should only be in other countries.
You talked about corrupt government. Would that include local government, city of New Orleans itself?
city, state, federal. I look at corruption as corruption. I don't care where it comes from. When it's bad, it's bad. Corruption is a word that creeps into why there's so many problems.
The flood, terrible aftermath, particularly affected the black population and the poor black population. You're not a black man. Mm-hmm. What did you feel you could do? What was the best thing you could do? Give concerts, make recordings, raise money that way?
We did everything we could possibly do. In fact, at some point, about a year and a half later, I had to just start taking some gigs to keep my band alive. We would literally, in so much financial problems just from doing so many things for the people. But it's...
Was that because you played without taking payment?
We were trying to do things to do what we could to help in any way. It was organizations in New Orleans, like the New Orleans Musicians Clinic that was there long before Katrina. There were new ones popped up that were... One of them was using the name of a song we had recut after Katrina called Sweet Home New Orleans. But there was a lot of organizations that were doing things to try to help. And we tried to help all of the ones that we knew people were getting help. We didn't want to do anything where the money, where it went, was corrupt.
You released an album called Sepiana Hurricane in 2005, which must have been not long after the tragedy. What did you try to say with that album?
Well, and we were all pretty much shocked that we had to go to make a Japanese tour right before that, and people raised up money and... It was like we were all so, the whole band is like, my drummer lost his pad. So many of the guys lost everything they had.
Members of your band lost a great deal.
Yeah, and it was across the board. I mean, guys, you can't imagine how many people is affected that, I mean, I can't even imagine because I see people across the United States now, even in Canada, there's even some here that I have no idea how they got here or how they got there. I have no idea of any of this. But the fact is they don't feel right not being where their roots are. Everybody in Louisiana's got deep, rooted feelings, especially South Louisiana. It's a different culture thing that, and we're very traditional about everything.
What was the message of that album?
We were trying to say, the pain we felt. That was the first thing. And that it was like... I think that was the where the first record we made about this was coming from. Then it was anger, the next record we did.
Pain and then anger.
We were starting to work on some of the songs immediately. Bobby Charles had called me and the first song we wrote about this, it was started, but we didn't finish it. It was called Black Gold, and it was about how the oil companies had really already messed it up. But we hadn't finished that song.
If you go back to New Orleans, and you've been back many times, how often do you feel things are improving? Has the area that was so devastated, is it better now?
Actually... on the whole, no. In areas, yeah, there's a lot of improvement, but it's always the same story. Where the the heart and soul of New Orleans music comes from, whether it's the Treme, the Lower Ninth Ward, all of these places that were so devastated, always got the short end of the deal.
You mean they haven't yet been totally regenerated?
There's nothing there that's been totally regenerated, but the point is that those places really are still basically unpopulated spaces.
How much did the musicians manage, the ones who didn't leave, manage to get together, maybe with your help, and form some sort of strong protective mechanism so that they would carry on being employed in the future?
Well, a lot of the guys that were able to stay, because I had an out-of-state phone number, and so a lot of guys, I was the only guy they could call. And during the whole time after that, there were guys called, and I had a girl traveling with me that was, I told her, write down whatever we're talking about on the phone. And I put it on a speakerphone, and songs came out of that from guys like, there was a song, My People Need a Second Line, that originally started as a guy saying they didn't have enough musicians in New Orleans to have a second line for a guy that was a well-known musician and had just passed. And I just thought the idea of not being enough guys to do a second line, which is a part of our tradition and culture, was just so that we wanted to have one in Washington, D.C. And that idea turned into a song.
Just one more question, if I may. Now New Orleans is possibly threatened, as we speak, and we're talking at the end of June, threatened by the BP Gulf of Mexico explosion. I know you're concerned to protect the wetlands of Louisiana. What are you concerned about oil spill now?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like all of the fishermen, all of the people that we depend basically on the birds coming in on their migratory paths, which is the most, that Louisiana supplies 40% of the seafood for the United States. And most of the people, is a lot of my family and ancestors of Choctaw people, and it's connections to where these are the people that is getting affected the most. And they are seeing now just humongous land masses going past their houses that look like ships. It's horrible situations, and they have no way to make a livelihood. And it's on and on. It doesn't just affect that, but then the other people that work for oil companies is a lot of people in South Louisiana. And they're worried about their jobs because they've stopped all the drilling right now. And these are the kind of things that, because there's more oil drilling off the coast of Louisiana than any place in the world, it's the only state that doesn't collect any money for this. It's the only state that has situations, and that the last vice president made a deal with the oil company, said it was onerous that the oil company should have to have safety devices. Well, of course, it opened the door for any kind of thing with big corporations' greed.
Will New Orleans' old musical life ever be the same again?
Well, nothing is ever the same anyway, but being in this situation, the music's going to live, but I hope there's a place there for it to live. That's my deepest prayer.
What do you mean by that?
That New Orleans is still there. We have a hurricane right at its door right now, and who knows? We don't know from day to day. It's what's going to happen. And that's how we've had to live for since before I was born. And it's gotten worse and worse and worse.
Dr. John, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.